You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.
This week, the Times Higher Education published the inaugural Best University Workplace Survey. My name is Chris Parr. I'm joined by two people who helped to develop that survey. Yanis Gabriel is Chair in Organisation Studies at the University of Bath School of Management, and his colleague Rob Briner, Professor of Organisational Psychology at the same institution. Thank you very much both for joining me.
You're welcome.
Thank you.
The survey had more than 4,500 responses from 2,081 academics and 2,503 people identifying themselves as either professional or support staff. They were given 29 statements ranging from "I find my job rewarding" to "my university has a fair equal opportunities policy" and asked the extent to which they agreed or indeed disagreed with those statements. Some of the top line findings for you here: most university staff, you'll be happy to hear, find their job rewarding. The majority feel proud to work for their institution. There's concern about the performance of university leaders, almost half in fact, expressing dissatisfaction. But more than half of academics said they were content with their salaries, just over a quarter saying they weren't. That's just three examples of the findings that came out of this. They're all published in this week's magazine. But perhaps I come to you first, Yanis. What findings jumped out at you off the back of this particular report?
Well, the first thing that I would like to indicate is that nearly 46% of all academics expressed a view that their voices are not adequately heard within the present context. Mm. So I would like to compliment the Times Higher for initiating this survey, because it is the first opportunity for academics and other staff in universities to make their voices heard regarding the quality of working life in their institutions. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. To date, many academics have been measured in many different ways, assessed and appraised, and this is the first opportunity that they have of making their own appraisals and putting their voices on the record.
Absolutely.
So I think this is a very encouraging development.
Yes, the two of you have, we're very grateful, you've provided commentary for the magazine article as well this week. And I noticed, Yanis, you said that stat on making the voice heard was the most significant finding. Interesting that academics, 46% said they struggled to make their voice heard, compared to 34-ish percent of those working in professional and support roles. So quite what this survey found, I think, is there's quite a lot of difference between the academic university population and those working in other roles.
I think that in a way, academics have felt that they are members of academic institutions, and making your voice heard is absolutely an essential part of their vocation. And I think it's for this reason that many of them feel that at the moment, within the present institutional structure, it is not possible for them to express their opinion about the leadership of the university, the quality of the working lives, and many other aspects of working universities.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Rob, how about you? What was it about the survey? What sort of findings grabbed your attention?
Well, I think one of the things I noticed that did jump out a bit was the fact that a lot of academic staff, and in fact other staff at universities, were quite satisfied with their job, quite high levels, around kind of 80%, I think, were positively satisfied in a way. And this contrasts, I think, with other things these same staff said about things like work-life balance. And they're concerned about that, and also the fact that job might be having some kind of effect on their health and well-being in other ways. And in a way, I think that's not untypical of very vocational kinds of jobs or certain sorts of institutions, where people believe in the institution, believe in their work, and want to work hard, but at the same time are aware that sometimes it's placing extra kinds of demands on them. So I think you get a quite interesting pattern here of saying, yes, I'm satisfied with my work, I get it's rewarding, but at the same time, I sometimes feel it's kind of harming me, or it's just a bit too much to deal with sometimes.
Yeah. Yes, Yanis.
So I think that you get a really important pattern here of academics really, on the whole, loving their work, but at the same time somatizing their malaise. In other words, attributing the stresses of the work channeling the stresses of the work into bodily symptoms. At the same time, I think that what Rob mentioned is very interesting in connection to their attitudes towards their institution, when we find that 65.6% claim to be proud to work in their institution, and yet at the same time, 62% of academics claim that their institution takes advantage of them. Mm. This is another very ambivalent expression of emotion, which I think is very interesting.
Mm. And overall, if you look at their fairness or reasonableness of the workload allocated to them, around half kind of said it was reasonable, and I guess that means half weren't sure or didn't think it was reasonable. So again, I think there's this sense of people feeling a little bit overwhelmed while at the same time still getting some sense of reward and satisfaction from the work they're doing.
And on that pride in the institution point, I think you made the point that academics perhaps are frequently sort of tied to their subject area maybe more than they are to their individual institutions. They see themselves as local branches of, say, the biology community or the physics community. So I think the figures suggested that those working in non-academic roles were more likely to be proud of their institution than those who are academics, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think academics do have these multiple identities and often identify, as you say, more strongly or equally strongly with their subject or discipline as they do in a kind of international global community of scholars in that area, as they do with the place they happen to work. So yes, I think in that sense, that's quite an interesting finding, as you say, that non-academic staff have a stronger sense of pride in where they work. And I think that probably non-academic staff are less likely to move around, and they kind of very much see that as the focus of all their professional activities, where academics might see the focus, as I say, quite globally in other institutions with other people outside.
Absolutely.
Another finding, academics again, teaching and research, I mean, there's a myth maybe, or perhaps our findings go some way to dispel the myth that teaching for academics is seen as a means to an end, whereas research perhaps is the real reason why they're involved in academia. Now, our findings show that sort of 78% thereabouts and 80% of academics value teaching and research respectively. So very similar figures. Do you think this does dispel that myth to some extent?
I think so. I think that's a very important finding. That 78.4% expressed great satisfaction with their teaching and 80.4% for the research activities. It suggests that both of those areas of academic work continue to be central to academic vocation, and the notion that some academics are putting the one above the other, most usually research above teaching, I think is dispelled by this finding.
I think it is, and also one of the things I think to bear in mind with teaching, with things like the National Student Satisfaction Survey being around as well, that has good sides and bad sides to it. But I think one thing it has done is made, I think, all of us focus a bit more on teaching and the quality of it and what we actually do, whether or not that directly leads to increased student satisfaction. And also for some of us, I think, who can use our own research interests in our teaching, it is a huge source of satisfaction, I think, particularly postgraduate teaching, I'm guessing.
Yeah, and I think that will be interesting to find eventually how this balance plays out in new and old universities, whether it is comparable or not.
Absolutely. Speaking of subjects, one of the questions that we asked respondents was whether they felt their subject area was valued by their university. Perhaps not surprising, but a confirmation maybe of a generally perceived truth that engineering and technology academics feel their university values their subject area more than those working in the creative arts. We have Thomas Doherty, professor in English at the University of Warwick, commenting on this in the report that you can read in the magazine. He sort of says the Brown Review is to blame for the demotion of arts and humanities in the eyes of many university leaders, and describes these findings as troubling. Would you go along with that?
Well, in a way, yes. And I think the idea of universities incorporating every subject and discipline has sort of went some time ago, which is sort of sad in a way, at least from my point of view. But also the piece you published a couple of weeks ago in the Times Higher, looking at the sort of ebbs and flows of popularity in subjects. I think one of the issues around, I guess, the universities becoming more and more commercial institutions is if students like certain subjects such as business and management and want to apply for courses, it's naturally that's where universities tend to put their resources. So it's not surprising that maybe less popular subjects, people working in those perhaps feel that the university values them less, because frankly possibly they do, I mean literally values them less, because they're not bringing the same amount of money. At the same time, it clearly, as I said, isn't all about bringing in students, and there is something incredibly important, at least for me, about the idea universities have and support all kinds of subjects. It's kind of one of the points of universities, I think.
Absolutely, and I think that we should not overemphasize the disparities between the different groups. You find that even among the so-called privileged subjects, there are still a substantial number of academics who believe that they are viewed as less important by their university. So 65% among biological, mathematical and physical sciences believe that their subject is important, but 34-odd don't. Mm-hmm. So I think that overall it is essential for university leadership to appreciate that universities are commonwealths in which every discipline and subject has a place, and it is essential to not marginalize subjects that for one reason or another are not as popular at the present moment of time.
And it would be interesting to find out later points as we perhaps go on with this and do some more analysis on it, what it is about what universities do and don't do that make people feel that their subject is more or less valued. Is it about student numbers? Is it about facilities? Is it about other kinds of rewards? So why do people have that particular kind of feeling?
Yeah, and this survey will inform the Times Higher's editorial content in the coming year. There's some really strong comments and some really interesting opinions given in the answers. We can't publish all of it, of course.
Sure.
But we will, of course, be looking to dig a bit deeper into that data as we progress. One thing we should mention before we finish is perhaps pay. Obviously a contentious issue at the moment, but our findings, if we stick to those rather than the wider context, sort of reveal that the majority of staff feel their institution offers a fair deal in terms of remuneration. Obviously, you know, that's determined by national pay scales to an extent, and perhaps that's reflected in some of the findings. But I think it was Rob, you say in the article that the findings on pay were fascinating.
Well, they are fascinating because I think I think all university academic staff know that academic pay is pretty much been declining for the last 20 or 30 years, and clearly this has been an issue that people feel quite strongly about, yet people still report relatively high levels of satisfaction. And I think one way possibly to interpret that is when people say they're satisfied with some aspect of the job, what are their comparisons? And my guess would be in times when perhaps people feel vulnerable, where there's some job insecurity, in a sense that satisfaction pay is more reflecting, well, I've actually still got a job and it feels fairly secure, and that's satisfying or gives me satisfaction, not necessarily ultimately or the absolute level of pay as such. So I think that is quite an interesting discrepancy that say academics most are very aware of the fact pay has not increased and in fact gone down in real terms, yet they're still saying, well, it is rewarding. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I would echo that. Even so, I think that there is evidence here that a solid quarter of academics feel that they are being underpaid. And when you put this side by side with the more than 50% who believe that the university takes advantage of them, I think that there is a degree of discontent that university leadership should be aware of.
Hmm. Yeah, and as ever with these surveys, you get a sort of chunk of people who say they're satisfied, but clearly there's this other smaller chunk that sort of certainly aren't. And I think, again, digging into this a bit more deeply, I think will be really interesting.
The magazine feature, if you take a look, has a few individual topics pulled out for closer inspection. One of those is equal opportunities policies. Yanis, I think you had some interest in the findings on that subject.
Yes, I was a little disappointed by these findings because I had hoped that the intense effort and resources that universities have been putting into equal opportunities in the last 10 or 20 years would have borne more visible fruit than what we have here. I think that there is some optimism to be expressed, but at the same time there is a quite substantial degree of disappointment with the level of equal opportunities offered by academic institutions, and this is definitely something that university leaderships should be aware of.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Another of those boxes focuses on the REF. Which was a topic that popped up time and time again in the comments that we also collected. Around 6,000 comments were made during the survey. But, Rob, I mean, this is all part of this audit culture, isn't it, the REF? I mean, it's definitely impacting on people in universities. Again, it's nice to have some stats to show to what extent.
Yeah, it is very much. I mean, in this particular survey, around 35% believed that their institution's response or way of dealing with the REF had had a negative impact on their work. And what is interesting about this survey is it adds, I guess, to the ever-growing, it seems, kind of auditing of university staff, both through REF and both through the National Student Satisfaction Survey. And as we go forward with this, what I think is going to be really interesting is to look at the attitudes and feelings of staff and actually compare those with how maybe different institutions perform in the REF and also National Student Satisfaction. Certainly you might expect to see some kind of link between those things and how staff actually feel about working the place. And if we can dig some of that out, I think it could be really valuable.
Indeed. Well, my thanks to both Yanis Gabriel and Rob Briner, both for your help in developing the survey and for coming down to talk about it today. We've barely scratched the surface of the information that's contained in the article. Do take a look at it online, timeshighereducation.co.uk, and let us know what you think about the results. We've published findings in the area of pay and conditions, politics and policy, workplace atmosphere. There really is loads to get your teeth into, so do take a look. But that's all for this special podcast looking at the inaugural Times Higher Education Best University Workplace Survey.
You're listening to a Times Higher Education podcast.